Welcome to the airport lounge. Table for two, gentlemen? Right this way. Here's your booth. Have a great show.
Welcome to the Airport Lounge, the Winnipeg Jets podcast. Much like a work Christmas party, fun until it's not. I'm Mike Guthrie, and I'm joined as always by my good friend and foot and football enthusiast, Vaughn Mitchell. How's it going, buddy?
I'm doing well, Mike. I'm enjoying the season. Every day brings with it its own surprise, perhaps a delicious treat or the equally possible jagged little pill that's difficult to swallow. And no, Mike, I'm not talking about an advent calendar. I'm referring to the Winnipeg Jets.
Oh, I thought you were going to throw an Alanis Morissette reference in there. There's a
well,
lot,
I,
a lot
I went
on.
There, and then that segues into what music we can use at the end.
There you go.
So, you know,
always thinking of me, Vaughn.
She's pretty awesome. So anytime you get a chance to work her into your podcast, it just bumps up, you know, listenership.
Absolutely. So we have a lot to get to. It's been a tick. But I really quickly, I wanted to have a quick story time. This is complete silliness, but anybody who listens, Vaughn and I and our friend Rich and John went to the Nashville game. We were up in the 300s, and we were going through security, the Shark Club security line, and we before doing a couple rails, because that's what you do at Shark Club. But we were going through, and Vaughn, I've never been more proud of him. He was leading the way, the charge through the security line, and one of the security guys was really adamant that Vaughn take off his hat meters away from the checkpoint, and Vaughn gave him the stiff arm, no look, shrug away. It was like, it's just like me in my 20s and 30s in the bars and what women used to do to me. Like the utter disdain, but respectful disdain that you showed this guy and the look on his face was like, okay, I literally got put in my place and I was howling. So for that, Vaughn, congratulations. You're my new hero. It was incredible.
You mentioned to me this at the time, and I don't remember doing it. So it was either muscle memory from back in the day when I used to go to clubs, which was a long time ago, or I generally just didn't see them. So regardless, I'm glad. It was a fun night. I mean, the Jets played really good that night. We're going to get into it. It was great to get the gang back together again, and hopefully we can do it again at least once in the second half of the season.
Absolutely. So that'll take us to check-in time. So given the amount of games that we have to cover, we're gonna bring back an old true classic. We're gonna go Clint Eastwood style on this and go good, bad, and the ugly. So we'll break up the games into those three categories. To be clear, the bad is more of a meh than a bad, but it's not as catchy that way. So I'll let you do you want to identify where you and I haven't shared this about where we thought the various Jets games landed.
You want to go game by game or just a quick overall?
Just quick overall, and then we can go game by game.
Okay, you know, 5 wins, 4 losses. So obviously, there's going to be some really good stuff in there and some stuff that's not so good. I think you can't start this segment without talking about Josh Norrissey.
Oh.
I mean, he has been phenomenal through this stretch of games. He's been driving play. We're going to talk about him a little bit later on when we get to, pre-boarding assignments. But, you know, I've also been super impressed with PLD and Kyle Connor. PLD's been driving offense, 4 goals, 8 assists, as has Kyle Connor, 5 goals, 7 assists over the past 8 games. Sorry, I didn't include last night. I don't think either of them scored last night. It was Scheifele and Harkins that scored last night.
Yep.
So they've been doing a great job at driving offense. Scheifele has been good through this stretch as well, but I think the loss of Wheeler has really hurt that line somewhat in that, you know, he's really doing it all on his own. We've seen that kind of take a step down, the overall contribution that line has made. Connor Hellebuck continues to be one of the top goalies in the league. And overall, if you want to be good in any professional league, your best players have to be your best players. And that's what the Jets are getting right now. Okay. In addition to that, Adam Lowry has found his stepbrother in Morgan Barron.
I know, the two of them.
They are doing lots of karate in the garage. I love the way those two play together.
Do you want to go do karate in the garage? Yup.
And I think lastly, The thing that I've really liked is this evolution of the offensive zone attacking posture. And there's a lot of movement and overlap in the offensive zone. And that's been somewhat of a new development that we've seen. I think it's fantastic. Attacking with all five players in non-static positions, I think is fantastic. Movement creates confusion and fatigue in the defending team. And I think when we get some of our injured players back, we're going to see more and more of that. So for me, that has been the good that I've extracted from these last nine games. What about you?
So excellently said. I'm going to add a few. Big save, Dave. I thought stepped up and acquitted himself very nicely in Hellebuck's absence. I think this is more of a macro point, but I think, you know, the Blackhawks, the Canucks, we're doing more of beating the bad teams than we did last year. We've had 2 to 3 years of we'll have a really good game against, say, Colorado, and then we'll get pasted by the Blackhawks the next game, and it's just mind-blowingly inconsistent. And for the most part this year, we've taken care of business when we absolutely would, could, and should.
So that's a fantastic point. Continue, but that's a fantastic point.
So the other aspect is that, you know, our zone exits, we're still struggling to a certain extent, especially in the defensive zone, and we'll get to this in pre-boarding announcements. I have a particular offender that I'd like to call out. But I do like, and you kind of stole my thunder a bit, our offensive zone play is, to me, it's a bit night and day. We're playing sort of the two deep and one back. And I think we are able to sustain pressure I don't want to say much easier, but easier than we were last year. Again, we still get hemmed in our own zone, but I thought our play in the offensive zone, as you so articulately put it, has been much better. And outside of that, I think you covered sort of the bulk of it. I think we're probably going to have the same. I think we're going to anoint the same person in first class.
We'll see. So you want to move to the bad?
Let's move to the bad.
Okay, the bad. For me, it's the inability for the Jets to demonstrate a consistent performance from night to night. I think your point about beating and that's the exact point I had about the Chicago game, is that we need to take those games, and we're doing that. But overall, from night to night, our performance is a little bit too up and down at the moment. And this is due largely to changes in the lineup and injuries. We're flirting with being a 500 hockey team at the moment.
Yeah.
Slow starts on the road. Typically, we started well, obviously, last night in Boston, but tapered off at the end against an incredibly good Bruins team. What else has been bad through this stretch of nine games for me? The addition of Wheeler and Schmidt to the LTIR. As I mentioned, Scheifele has cooled off a little bit in terms of production, but he's still dynamic and creating chances. I think he's got 5 goals and no assists over the past 9 games. So again, he's shouldering. 5 goals is impressive. The no assist means he's not getting the help he needs from his
winners. That's exactly it.
And for me, Brendan Dillon and Neil Pion continue to provide lackluster performances. In fact, I had checked in before last night's game. Pion was ranked 208th in the NHL in Corsi 4 percentage. So for me, that's been the bad over the past 9 games. There's still the ugly, and I'll get to the ugly in a second, but what do you have as the bad?
Okay, so if you'll permit me, I've got a bit of a soliloquy here.
Oh, no, please go ahead. I was just getting comfortable and waiting for you to go off, which I love when you do, so please go.
Okay, so if we look at it objectively, statistically from last year, I obviously, from a winning percentage and just general vibes, this team is in a much better spot. And I know we touched on this last podcast, and I know that we're both of the belief that this team is performing much better under Coach Bones than it has in years prior under the tenure of Paul Maurice. But I started breaking it down. So our goals for per game and goals against per game are both obviously objectively better. We're goals for this year, we're 3.33. Last year, we were 3.05. Goals against this year, we're 2.55. Last year, we were 3.09, which is a significant difference. Mm-hmm. So just objectively, at the very highest level, that's better. Our power play, better. 23.5, better from or above 21% from last year. Our PK is 81% this year, and our PK last year was 75%. So all good things. When we get to the underlying stats, our Corsi numbers, identical. Our expected goals, identical. Our high danger for and high danger against chances, the ratio is about the same. We're giving up more high danger chances than we're getting. Mm-hmm. We're the only difference being is that this year we're below the average, and last year we were above the average. So essentially last year we were more high event hockey, and this year we're more low event hockey. And the bigger difference is that our shooting percentage from last year was 7.62. It's 8.74 right now. And our save percentage is 92 this year, and it was 90 last year. So this all comes down to my friend and yours, and everyone's going to be sick of hearing act stiff.
Act stiff,
yes. Act stiff is essentially a measurement of sort of the comparison of your expected goals for and expected goals against. Those teams that have exceptional goaltending and are shooting well have high act stiff, and we have traditionally been that team. And, you know, if you're not, there's sort of varying degrees of it. But last year we were a minus two, and we were 16th. This year we're back up to 14th, or we're up to 14, and we're third. And it's just there's an inkling, given the injuries and given that we're rostering basically a 35% Moose roster, that we are getting by here mostly on elite goaltending and an uptick in shooting percentage. Now, I know there's a lot more to that, and there's, you know, the play itself I know has changed, but that's sort of the bad for me.
Hallelujah! Holy shit! Where's the Tylenol?
Is that when I dig into this, it's eerily similar to years past where we're getting by on some of the intangibles and our 5-on-5 underlying metrics aren't where they should be for a team that, you know, everyone's saying is competing for a Stanley Cup.
So put slightly differently, this is a little bit more of a house of cards than other teams. There is a lack of foundation in the sustainability of our play, and it won't take much to undermine that. And just to your point, we've had a couple key additions to the LTIR recently, and I'm looking at our high danger chances. We were quite, from the Chicago, Washington, Vegas, and Nashville games, we were quite prolific in creating a high danger chances, 18, 19, 13, and 20 respectively. And I think it was in the Nashville game that Blake Wheeler broke his dick I have a joke about that coming up. And Schmidt got hurt in that game. So since that game, which has been Vancouver, Seattle, Ottawa, and Boston, we've gone 4, 9, 8, and 11 high danger chances. So a big tick down. So it is, you know, there's a fine line between winning and losing in any professional league. The NHL is certainly included in that. And you're right. You know, we're going to have to get some of these guys back off of the LTIR really quickly. Or, like I said, we're flirting with this 500 hockey. Now, the good thing I've checked that I found in checking today was the other teams in our division, save Minnesota, are also flirting with about a 500 record in the last 10. I think only Minnesota is at 7-3. Yeah. Everyone else is at like 5-4-1 or 4-5-1 over the past 10 games. So we've been a little bit fortunate in that regard. So again, I completely agree with you. Now let's move on. What's been ugly for me, and I think this is the obvious one, it's the injury list. Okay, it's now gone deep enough into our lineup to start affecting on ice performance. Okay, we barely have enough talent to compete against the best when everyone is healthy. Now we're a glorified AHL team with 4 to 5 NHL superstars in the lineup. You know, moving forward, including the decision to add or not to add to this roster, could really determine or undermine what has been to date the best start in Jets 2.0 history. Okay. To win in high-level sports, you need 4 things, Mike. Good players, good coaching, good health, and good luck. And if one of those fail, it's nearly impossible to win over the long run. Well, so right now, you know, I think we have good players, right? We are near the top of the NHL, even with all of these injuries. Our top players are performing like top players, as we alluded to. Good coaching. The whole vibes thing. Something's going on that's fundamentally different. I think right now we're getting good coaching. Okay. Good luck. Well, I don't know. I think a good luck for me is something like the Avalanche getting a ton of injuries and them being having a massively subpar year that's opening the door for the Jets to have a top level outcome in terms of where they are in the standings in the division. And, you know, good health. Well, they haven't had good health. So what do? Maybe you go out and bring in more good players. And that will lead us in a little bit into a question I have for you. But for me, that's been the good, the bad, and the ugly. What do you see as the ugly, Mike?
I just framed it in a different way, but the exact same thing. It's the ugly is watching Kuhlman and Stenlund and Gagné. Again, and no disrespect to them, because they are solid average to sometimes below average bottom six forwards that are being asked to fill a role that they're not capable of fulfilling. And so it's frustrating, you know, the constant rotation of them through the top lines. And to your point earlier, just the frustration, I think he wears it well, but like for Scheifele, right, where it's like you've got basically a rookie on one wing. And now you're dragging along
a replacement level player,
right? And it's just again, I over time, that's going to wear out our top players, and they're not going to be performing at peak levels. So that's my thing too. Is that, you know, it relates to a question I'm going to ask later, but I don't think we hit the panic button quite yet. But we do need within, I would say, the month to bring some quality level, I would say, on both forward and defense. Because this isn't sustainable. It's just not. And that, to me, that's the ugly.
Absolutely. Now, Mike, if you don't mind, there's a few things. Maybe we could. There are some few individual things from those nine games I'd like to draw out of into our podcast.
Do it.
Got some time for that?
Do it.
All right. So first, I want to start with what you alluded to, the Nashville game. I like to refer to that as the Return of the Mac event. Okay. Or nice. The boys are back in town. No, we all live here, so it's not really the boys are all back in town. Okay, so I thought the Jets were excellent in that one and well-deserving of the win. They outshot the Predators 41-26, creating 20 high danger chances and an XG of 4.73, which is the second highest of the season.
Yeah.
Okay, it was one of those rare games this year where the Jets didn't score three goals and they won, actually the first and only time this season that happened. But the sad part, as I mentioned, it was really unfortunate that Wheeler broke his dick in the game. but he had the courtesy to finish the game. Listen, the last thing he wants to have happen is to be put back into the airport lounge penalty box. Brought to you by Thongs, Dongs, and Bongs. Okay, listen, when Anthony Michael Hall broke his dick in Johnny B. Goode, do you know what happened? They had to put in Robert Downey Jr., the backup quarterback. He came into the game and it was a disaster. He fumbled the first snap. Blake Wheeler was not going to let that happen to his team. So good on Blake Wheeler.
Wow. Pulled out a Johnny B. Goode reference. That is solid beyond solid. That's
football
well,
movie.
I know. It's a kind of an unheralded, you know, in terms of all those movies of that era, of that ilk, it goes a little unnoticed. So good for you. And I want to, again, offer a bit of a mea culpa. I was hard. I wrote an article after this game, and I was hard on him about, you know, some of his play, mostly in the third period, because he blew a tire on a scoring chance and had about two or three giveaways. And given the fact that he broke his grundle... Then I, you know, he gets a pass. So yeah, well said. Enough. Yeah.
The other thing I'd like to allude to is the really exciting thing that happened in the Canucks game. Longtime Airport Lounge sponsor,
right.
Mr. Dan Wilton, well done. President and CEO of First Mine and Gold. He was in the crowd and actually, you know, I called Sportsnet and I said, hey, this guy is going to be there. Can you see if you can get him on? No, I'm kidding. But he did make it onto the television.
Multiple times.
Multiple times. It did. The first time it looked like he was going to slap a kid in the face. But no, I do think he was giving the kid's dad a high five, a little bit of a backhanded high five. Okay, but, you know, it was awesome to see him representing the Jets out in Vancouver. And I know he listens and supports the podcast. Obviously, he's a sponsor. But it was great to see him have a good time and have him see the Jets win. So,
And it was – he was sort of our sideline reporter, and he was sort of reporting that it was like between 40 and 60% Jets fans there. Like, we were hearing on the telecast, go Jets, go chants, and the True North chant was very strong. And it looked like just in his little section, because they kept showing him on TV, he was their go-to guy, but it was, you know, a very significant portion of Jets fans. So it was nice to be represented in Coover.
And we're going to return to the Vancouver situation in the questions at the end of the game in Flight Entertainment. At least I will. Real tire fire happening right there, right now.
Oh, my goodness.
There right now. And, you know, so that lends itself to, you know, the tickets being available to Jets fan and being louder because the Vancouver fans are not even fighting back. They're just lying down, just like the Canucks really did throughout the course of the game. So thank you, Canucks. But, you know, we're facing some of our own challenges. They're different. You know, in watching the Kraken game in Seattle, I mean, you know, it really that so this is the game or a couple games after Wheeler's out and Schmidt's out and the, you know, it's just piling up. It's piling up. And in that game, it was the first one really where the Jets looked like they were just four players in a trench coat. You know, we're being propped up by about four or five guys, and that's driving us forward. And the Kraken are good. Like
they're good. They're a solid possession team.
The Bruins are good. So I don't know. You point to those games, and you get two, especially with excellent performance by Rittich in the Kraken game. But you know, in the Senators game, I like to call that one the Axe Stiff Bowl. I mean,
got outplayed.
Two goals on four shots, four goals on 11 shots, five goals on 17 shots. I thought the Senators were a better team. They wanted to quit several times during the game. Like, you could just see it. They wanted to quit, but the Jets just kept, nope, Senators, here you go. Here's some more opportunities.
Yeah, keep scoring, keep shooting.
Keep shooting. We're going to give you some chances. Although it was not a 5-1 game. Like I said, it was definitely a game driven by, you know, super opportunistic shooting percentage and some excellent goaltending. The one thing I've started to like in the last two games, I want to get your opinion on this. I think Hainala has looked really good with Scheifele and Perfetti. Like, we're looking, I really think that that's a way that maybe they can get Scheifele a little bit more offensive help, is to put Hainala out there a lot with Scheifele, and then he can help create that offense where that Kuhlman guy, he's not creating any offense. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm going to step on one of my questions, and it was, do we think that Hainala deserves now a permanent spot? And I'm looking at you, Sandberg, because his costly giveaways, again, he's been solid in certain respects, but I 100% agree. And what do you know? You put a skilled puck mover and offensively gifted player with two other offensively gifted players. Wow, good things happen.
Yeah,
that's fantastic. So I could not sign off on this more. I 100% agree with you.
All right, do you want to do a MacWack continuum based on the nine games?
Let's do it.
All right, so I'll start her off, keeping with that trend. I'm going to give it a solid 7. There were some solid performances, taking into account the scope and importance of the injuries the Jets are dealing with during that stretch of games. I did see an analysis that took into account, it looked at one of three ways: total games, total impact on the salary cap, and then the impact on, you know, war or GAR,
right,
or whatever.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And where it really, where the Jets were second, I mean, the Avalanche have been decimated this year.
Yeah.
They've had the greatest negative impact based on injuries. But the Jets were second when you looked at it and based on expected goals.
Well, that's interesting. I didn't know that. That's good.
Yeah, yeah. So other teams may have had more games than the Jets have had, like man games, but to say less impactful players, so that the total games, the impact is less. Salary caps, again, other teams have had more, at least over, it's really stacked up against the Jets recently, but other teams have had more total games and total cost associated. But, you know, it was the Jets just behind the Avalanche as losing the most impactful player, and that was dominated. It was predominantly the impact of Ehlers, who we've been missing since the beginning of the year. So,
yeah.
When taking into account some decent victories, several excellent individual performances, I'm giving it a solid 7.
Okay, that's exactly what I had written down too, and a bit different, but along the same vein, is that the, you know, with Wheeler's exit and Nate Schmidt's exit, I thought we have accounted ourselves well, or as well as we could. And the Boston game is a perfect example. That team is just incredibly good.
Yep.
And, you know, did we benefit from some elite goaltending and then a bad break at the end? Absolutely. But we kept that, I think, as close as we could, given the roster that we have at the moment. And I thought we showed some real fight. And I thought, outside of the sort of the Senators and the Kraken games, which I thought our effort level wasn't where it needs or should be, I thought that we acquitted ourselves very well over the past 2 weeks or so. And so, and entertaining as hell. So I'm giving it a 7.
Nice. Nice.
All right. Pre-boarding announcements.
Fasten your seatbelts. It's going to be a bumpy night.
All right. Okay. Let me start.
Okay.
First class assignment brought to you by First Mining Gold, providing first class gold mining development advice and services since 2015. I don't think it will come as a surprise that it will be a Josh Norrissey again. And there's a specific reason.
Oh.
I came across a metric that Evolving Hockey, developed.
Exact same. Okay, good.
Yeah. So just for our listeners, according to Evolving Hockey, Morrissey now leads the league, not just defensemen, the entire league, in an analytical category called GAR, G-A-R.
Yeah.
Now, as I said, I was going to say, for our listeners, I'll quickly define that so they understand what it is. Goals above replacement is a metric that attempts to assign a total value to each player, which represents how much that player contributed to their team in a single number. This single number is comprised of multiple components that are ratings for each area of play in a given sport. So there'll be an offensive impact,
defensive impact.
Yeah, and interesting, Morrissey's total is being driven almost entirely
by the offense. Yeah.
Yeah, his defensive contribution is only slightly negative, but he's just really driving play for us. And I do think that really the landscape has shifted since we last talked about this. We were like, I don't know, these other guys.
Now, yeah, right.
No. I think now, again, it's only December 23rd. Lots of hockey left to play. I think we're 33 games into an 82-game schedule. So lots of hockey left to go. But right now, he is absolutely on the ballot for the Norris. Top three for sure. May not win, but we weren't even sure he'd be in the top three the last time we discussed it. That has changed over the course of the last 9 games. Full credit to Josh Norrissey. Come up to first class. I got some Ferrero Rocher up here. Got some Christmas cookies for you.
Turtles.
Oh, Ken, of course, turtles. So that's who I got in first class. How about you?
Josh Norrissey.
Yes.
And it was, you know, I saw the same stat. And it's something where if I'm breaking down the Norris Trophy race, like, obviously Erik Karlsson leads the league in defensive scoring. But if we're just looking at it simplistically in terms of, okay, well, that's fine, but who's the better defensive defenseman? Well, Carlson's a 0, pretty much, defensively. Yeah. And so, I mean, again, I don't know. I wrote a piece about this. I don't know exactly how the voters determine it. I doubt War and Gar are part of it, but I would hope that it is. That what I would say is Murat wrote a really good article very recently. And, you know, it pinpoints some of his deficiencies, like the earlier Vegas game, where it was an atrocious turnover laden defensive nightmare. But, you know, that he's leading in, like, if you take away, he doesn't play, it sounds minute, but he doesn't play as many minutes as the other top guys. Like, he's around 22, 23 minutes, and everyone else plays between 25 and 26. So if you're doing points per 60, he's actually right near, like, very, very close to Karlsson. So all of that said is that he's been a wonder, and it's a pleasure to watch. I've never enjoyed watching someone skate. It sounds weird to say, than watching him skate is just magical. And so we'll go in together. Double turtles for Josh Morrissey.
Awesome. Great edge work. Can we say edge work?
Edge work.
We got to work our edge work.
We're going to work edge work. Everything's about edge work.
Edge work. All right. Now, the penalty box.
Okay.
Brought to you by Dongs, Thongs, and Bongs. Come visit us at 1316 Main Street for a friendly, judgment-free shopping experience. Come once, and before you know it, you'll be coming all the time. So, I switched that up. I just thought of that. I like it.
Hold on. Let's keep this sophisticated.
So, the Jets have been battling, and it's really hard to jump on them. They're a little short. short-staffed right now. They're near the top of their division. But, you know, for me, it came down to two people. The first with Dylan Sandberg, still making a lot of mistakes, not getting the puck out of the zone. Not even when he's just trying to dump it out, he's flubbing those sometimes.
Yeah.
But he is tremendously athletic, and he's making a lot of plays that Logan Stanley cannot physically
make. No, and making some good plays with the puck.
Yes. His, like any first-year player, his play is all over the place. So he's got to work on his consistency. But he makes $900,000 a year or whatever it is. So for me, I think we need more out of the $5.9 million man, Neil Pionk, the Pionky Tonk man. And I'm putting the Pionky Tonk man in the penalty box simply because I wanted to say Pionky Tonk man again. That being said, we need more of him. He can't just be, you know, he's got to carry more water than he's carrying, you know, especially with Schmidt out, with Dylan's play regressing a little bit. And for me, we need him to be better. So it's kind of a mean one because I can't point to something or a series of plays or incidents that have really got him here. Maybe he's just getting put in by reputation alone. But I think we need more from Neil Pionk if we want to achieve some interesting things. Who do you got, Mike?
Yeah, I'm going the first two-time recipient. I'm going Brendan Dillon. I think that, again, for the amount that he is getting paid, same rationale. We just need more from him on a night-to-night basis and from a consistency basis. He'll have, you know, some decent games, but then when he's bad, he's really bad. Like if the flow of the game is too fast, he just can't keep up. And that leads to turnovers. And again, I understand sort of the physical nature of his presence, but I don't find that he clears the net any better than, say, Hinola. Right. Yeah. Like they're basically the exact same. The stats back that up. So again, I same rationale, you put it the best. So I'm going to put him in the penalty box, but realizing that, you know, we've had some struggles here in terms of injuries and other things.
Mm-hmm. Shall we move to in-flight entertainment?
Let's do it.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
Five questions. I think I got five. You have up to five, but let's really focus on making these quick hitters.
Okay. So I'll go first. So I'm going to, this is a statistical one, although silly. What do you think the odds are of one or more wins for us in the Calder, Norris, and Vezina trophies? Because right now, in my thinking, Perfetti, I think, is a bit of a long shot in terms of the Calder. Norris, we talked about, and Vezina, Hellebuck's a perennial candidate. So I guess I'll frame it a different way. Do you think there's any possible way that we win two of those three if we continue along the same trajectory?
I don't think the NHL likes to do that.
I don't either.
I think these things are they're rigged to a degree, in the sense that they'd want to. I think that they would have to be so far and above their competition for one team to win two of those major awards that I think a tie would just simply, or something close, they would try to move that around to involve more teams. I think if the Jets won 70 games this year, they're not going to, then the NHL might go, we have no other option than to acknowledge the dominance. But I do think that, you know, the Jets will finish, you know, in and around where they are now. As the season typically goes, there's not a ton of movement from this time of year towards the end of the year. I think the percentage is going to be quite low. I think the over under would be 0.5. I think that we're going to get one or none, to be honest. And I think I would bet the over, but two is that's a lot.
I purposely hyperbolic, but yeah.
Yeah. That should be the name of our podcast. Purposely hyperbolic.
You want to shoot your first one?
Sure. Okay. This comes to us from corporate sponsor Dan Wilton.
Oh, I knew it.
Should the Jets trade for hometown hero Jonathan Toews? Did you know he's from Winnipeg? Anyways, should we trade for Jonathan Toews to help with the playoff push?
So you and I, Vaughn, talked about this briefly before the Nashville game, and I was all in. Pure sentimentality aside, I truthfully, I hadn't really examined his play of late. And now I'm beginning to question my sort of all-in nature on this, because I don't think he's been very good. In fact, he's been downright terrible this year. And again, I might be terrible too if I had to play for the Chicago Blackhawks this year. And mm-hmm. so I know circumstances surrounding play a part in a player's performance. But I would, the short answer is yes, but I don't think I would give up a first for him. And I think that's what it would take, rightly or wrongly. Yeah. Because I think his possession stats are down across the board. I mean, he's got 10 goals and 7 assists. His expected goals is 14.1%. Like, that's almost hard to do. And and so I understand the emotional significance of it. But I'm pretty sure
I could do that, if not better or lower in the NHL.
Yeah. I mean, so I'm a tentative yes, but it would depend on the price, because I'm just not certain. We've done this before, right, where we bring in guys that are sort of past their prime to a certain extent, and it, you know, first-round draft picks are valuable, and so I would be cautious on this.
No, I think that's fair. I like how you framed it. I would also do it. I do think that Jonathan Toews, despite his lackluster regular season play, I look at Corey Perry a couple of seasons ago
for the
Montreal Canadiens, who was quite average throughout the course of the year, and then had a big impact in the tournament for Montreal. And I do think that Jonathan Toews could potentially provide something similar for the Jets. I think it will come down to whether Toews wants to do it or not. If they think, well, if they can get a second rounder or this developmental player or something that's maybe a little less than a first rounder from the Jets, if Toews wants to do this, like, listen, I'm a UFA at the end of this year. I'm coming back to you. You know what I mean? You're not losing me. It's not. It's unlike a lot of other situations. He may be like, I want one last kick at the. I want to play in the playoffs this year. We're not playing in the playoffs. Trade me that team. Get me something. I'm back. Yeah. I'll sign back in the summer. I'm sure maybe in the back of his head, it might be kind of cool to play for Winnipeg for a few months. I'm not sure that he'd want to come back and sign another contract with us. He'd want to go back and sign something a little bit more cost friendly to Chicago, which I think he's clearly, that's his home. He's a Chicago Blackhawk, right? But could we rent him for a couple months for something less than a first rounder? I think it's plausible.
Plausible.
Yeah. Especially if he has interest in it.
Right, if they work it through with him and say, hey, you want to go play Winnipeg for a few months? And then come back, we'll sign you up. So, yeah, okay, I think we're of like mind. So my next one is, and it's December, and two things are always true. Ehlers is usually injured, and Jets Twitter ramps up into a fever pitch about trading Ehlers. What say you?
Absolutely not. Never, ever, ever. I'm a loyal guy. I don't think Scheifele should ever wear another jersey. I don't think Ehlers should ever wear another jersey. I don't think Lowry should ever wear another jersey.
Oh, I like it.
You know, I just think that we need to keep these guys in the fold. This happens. Injuries happen. I mean, Scheifele's been injured a couple times and missed about a half a season a couple times, right? So, you know, not everyone can be like Blake Wheeler, who's injured for the first time in his 10 or 12 years here with the Winnipeg Jets. He's in the lineup every single night up until very recently. Guys get hurt. You know, I don't think that's the foundation to trade someone. I think that when he comes back and he's up to speed, that we're going to look like a juggernaut on some nights. I don't think that we're one player away from being a Stanley Cup contender, but I do think that he's going to radically transform how we look. Because you look at the way Connor and PLD have reformed themselves into something that's a point producing machine.
Yeah.
If we can do that with Ehlers and Scheifele and potentially Perfetti, I mean, look out. It's going to be interesting. So no, absolutely not.
Let me put my bona fides on the I love Ehlers, and his game's obviously somewhat chaotic and he doesn't mesh well with a lot of different players, but Scheifele and him, I think, have some chemistry. And I love him. He's one of my favorite Jets. I do understand a bit more of the argument with this latest injury bout. Because, again, it's very simplistic analysis, but he's a slight dude. And he plays at 100 miles an hour. And he's not careful, which I like about him. I mean, he's a bit of a Tasmanian devil, and that's part of the charm of his game. I'm just, I can see some of the impetus behind, well, if we can get like a top two defenseman for him, let's entertain that. I wouldn't do it, though. The analytics folks would smack me upside the head, because he's by far and away our clearest puck driver and driver of play, mm-hmm. and that's mm-hmm. been part of our problem. So I'm with you. I just, these injuries piling up, and I understand some of them are circumstantial, others are not, but it does give me a bit of pause that if this is what we're getting year in and year out, it really makes it difficult to go on any sort of sustained run. But short answer is no.
Yeah, hard no for me. Okay, my second question. With attendance down, but performance up, including the best ever start to a season from the Jets, can the Jets afford, both on and off the ice, to not make a trade to bolster their lineup, especially at the forward position? Attendance down, performance up. Can we afford not to make a trade?
I don't think we can. Put simply, no. I think we absolutely should, and I think we should be, again, obviously you and I are not behind the scenes or in the boardrooms, but I think, you know, we've caught lightning in the bottle to a certain extent, and mm-hmm. that's not always sustainable. And to me, you know, we've touched on it a few times already, is that, you know, we can only sustain this, I think, for only so long, given the injuries. And I understand you don't want to sell the future for undetermined outcomes, but these kind of things only happen or come along every so often. So, yeah, I 100% think we should be moving earth and stone and wind to try and pick something up, especially on the forward, get some forward depth.
Yeah, and just to put it into context as to what the genesis behind the question was, is that I do think if the rink was full and we're playing the same way, I think there's less pressure on management to make a move, to be honest. I think with attendance down and having been to two games in the last 7 or 8 days, there were a lot of empty seats. I don't think anything to be like completely worried about at this stage, but attendance is certainly down. And I think that when you're getting the level of on ice positive product that we're getting now, you gotta make a move, right? You gotta give even that extra reason, that extra level of excitement that pull people in. This is your opportunity. It doesn't come knocking a lot or very often. It's almost unexpected at this stage. You got to jump on that. We got to do something to push us forward even that little bit more.
Totally, 100% agree. And I lied to a certain extent in terms of my serious question. I'm going to throw a silly one at you.
All right.
What's your favorite holiday movie?
Oh, great. Well, I know where you're going with this. I think for me, it's A Christmas Story. I love that movie.
Oh.
You're obviously angling this towards whether is Die Hard a holiday movie or not.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
And I will defer to Bruce Willis, who said it's not A Christmas Story, even or not a Christmas movie.
I just saw on, I forget where it was, but Ronald Val Johnson, I've been getting that name wrong, I know I am, but he was the cop.
Okay.
He was interviewed very recently. He was like, absolutely, it's a Christmas movie. Obviously, Bruce Willis trumps all of that. But yeah, just for perspective, it's not a Christmas movie, by the way.
No. I couldn't care one way or another. But yeah, for me, A Christmas Story is just fantastic.
My daughter watched that for the first time this year.
Makes me
she
laugh.
Liked it.
Yeah, it makes me laugh every time. I mean, Elf, or there's other great holiday movies, but no, that's the one for me. All right, so building on my last question, with the Vancouver Canucks an intensely burning tire fire this year and looking to offload salary, and several key players of theirs putting in an effort similarly to what I put in my workplace on a daily basis, which isn't a lot, are they the most likely team the Jets are going to trade with? And if so, who would you like to see come to the Jets from their roster? Now, this is assume that Elias Pettersson and Hughes, the defensemen, are untouchable, because I'm pretty sure. So you can't say those. So we're looking at, like, would you prefer Bo Horvat, or would you prefer JT Miller or Brock Besser? Who do you like from their roster?
I've always liked JT Miller's game. I think he would be a bit of a spark. And Horvat I'd like as well. Those would be my two picks. I think there's a realistic possibility, if I'm the Jets, that's, you know, where, what carcass do you feed on? Well, there's no worse smelling carcass in the Vancouver Canucks at the moment.
Yeah.
Let's go. Let's do this. How about you?
I'm worried about things I hear about JT Miller.
I've heard some of that, yeah.
Yeah, like he doesn't play well and he doesn't quite recognize it. So I'm a little bit worried about him. I do think that the popular choice in the Jets room would be Bo Horvat if he's available.
Yeah.
I know that several of the Jets, I'm thinking Adam Lowry specifically, have spoken in glowing terms about the type of player he is. For me, it would be Brock Besser. I think we could get him at the least cost. And he would have the highest impact. We need scoring help on our right side, and I think he can provide that. Hopefully I'm not wrong here, I believe both Horvat, who's a center, and their captain, who would be expensive, and JT Miller, who's older and a left-handed shot, I believe, wouldn't really fit in with us like Besser would. So for me, that would be the guy I think would bring the greatest value to our lineup in terms of costing the least, although it would probably be expensive, and providing the most impact in our lineup.
Well put. You've actually swayed me. I'm now in your camp. That's well done.
Yes.
Well done.
Yes. All right. So how are we doing for time? I got two more questions. I think you got a few more questions.
I'm good. Okay? I'm out. Two of those that you've had were on my list, so we've knocked those out.
Okay. I got one. It's a fun one.
Okay.
And maybe it's the right one to end on. Okay, Mark Mathot, former journeyman NHL defender and current non-narrative setting podcaster, recently tweeted that the Fairmont sucks, that there are no good restaurants around Portage and Maine, and that no one wants to sign in Winnipeg.
Yeah.
So, he right, or was he really, really right?
It pains me, the sort of the homerism in me gets upset and defensive, but he's right. Like
I know,
the Fairmont is no great shakes.
I'm sorry.
It's not. Like, it seems to be, it's talked with such reverence, and I've been there. It's kind of a dump. Like, so I get it. If someone comes to you and says, hey, we're going to put you up in the best hotel in Winnipeg, and you go to the Fairmont, I'm like, is this a third world country?
Yeah.
That's obviously, again, just for spice and vinegar. You know, he's very right. And then where do you go to eat? You go to Heise, and everywhere else you have to take an Uber. Like,
You have the velvet glove in the lobby of the Fairmont.
Fair. The state of downtown, we could do I think you and I could do a 40-minute treatise on it. It's especially after COVID, the number of vacancies. Anyway, don't get me started. I don't like it, and he can go away, but he's not wrong.
No, he's not wrong. But I mean, I think things are improving around that area. And I mean, he's got dated information, right? So there's the Velvet Club. There's 529.
Fair, yeah.
They're opening a Highs, I believe. There is a Highs.
There's Highs, yeah.
They're opening a 529, I think, in the.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
Yeah.
It was the Bank of Montreal building. Now I think it's the Royal Bank building. But anyways. They have the, if you like the younger ladies, there's the Earls down the street, just a little ways that I think you can get to underground. So, I mean, come on, those are some pretty decent places to eat. I mean, you're a hockey player that grew up in St. Catharines or something like that. I mean, come on. You're not like, you know, the Rothschilds.
Yeah, you don't need Michelin restaurants for your
exactly
your 11, like, 11 o'clock hot dog run.
But I mean, the whole point about the Fairmont is, like, I completely agree. So, but I don't think you can't not get your back up a little bit. It was an unnecessary and uncalled for
shot. It's a drive-by shot for no reason. It's like, just be quiet. All right. On that note, you want to take us out?
So, fellow travelers, that's it for this episode of the podcast. Thanks for joining us in the Airport Lounge. Check us out on Twitter at Airport Lounge 55, with all episodes also available on Apple, Spotify, and Overcast Podcasts. Be sure to come back next week to the Airport Lounge, because the first round is always on us. Until then, go Jets, go. It's too late, and isn't it ironic? Don't you think?